guys. Oye, oye, oye. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Morning, everybody. With me, this is the matter of Miller, docket number 18-2796. With me are Judges Toth and Falvey. Will counsel enter their appearances, please, on the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Corey Creek from Bergman & Moore.
The appellant, Malone Miller. With me as
co-counsel
is Brian Anderson, also from our firm. Again, you'll argue?
Yes.
Want to save any time? Okay. And you're a Largo?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, proceed. Go ahead.
May it please the court. While the Secretary concedes that the claims on appeal should be remanded, the court should reverse the board's finding that VA satisfied its duty to assist because a favorable credibility finding is not a precondition to the requirement that examiners account for relevant lay statements. McKinney controls the remedy to be provided in this case because its holding was based on the same essential facts presented here. The lay statements asserted onset of disability during service. The examiners did not account for those relevant lay statements in formulating their opinions. The board addressed the statements, but did not find them to be incredible, and a medical nexus opinion was needed to determine service connection. The secretary characterizes our argument as asking that the court make a finding of fact in the first instance. But in this case, three items of the record show that the board accepted Mr. Miller's statements as true. First, its December 2016 remand at page 450 of the record said that while his service induction and separation examinations do not reflect flat feet, he has asserted that he suffered damage to his feet during long periods standing on the flight decks in boots, citing his 2014 statement. The board said, again, the veteran is competent to speak to observable symptoms such as pain, and these symptoms are capable of lay observation. The board then found that under these circumstances, examination and opinion should be obtained as to this matter. If the board did not accept his statements as to service incurrence, there would be no reason to request an exam to determine nexus. The board's analysis of the right-hand claim in that 2016 remand is also instructive, as in that instance, it also found the second shed-in element to be satisfied and then denied the claim on nexus. To be sure, the board stated that he established an in-service injury, and the only evidence in this regard were his lay statements that his of joint pain incurred during service. Second, the February 2017 request for the foot and GI examinations at page 426 of the record stated that the attention is invited to the veteran's assertions that in service he spent hours standing on the flight deck in boots, which caused his feet to hurt. So it's apparent that VA found these statements relevant and that it wanted the examiner to consider the statements in formulating its opinion. The third item of the record showing that the board has accepted these statements as true is its decision on appeal. On page 11 of its decision, the board says, as to the second shed-in element, he has asserted that he suffered damage to his feet during long periods standing on the deck in boots. On the next page, it acknowledges that he is competent to testify as to what he personally felt. Reading the decision on the whole, the board found the second shed-in element satisfied by his lay statements and then turned to nexus, denying the claim on nexus. If it didn't accept his statements as satisfying the second shed-in element, it would not needed to have proceeded to the third, nexus. The consequences of the secretary's position cannot be reconciled in a proclaimant statement system. It creates an inherent disadvantage to veterans. For example, applied to Mr. Miller, on page 15 of the secretary's memo, they go as far as to say, appellant's interpretation of McKinney would necessarily result in wasted time, because if given the opportunity to do so, the board could simply clarify that it found a claimant's lay testimony incredible. Again, the board cited to no evidence in its decision to contradict Mr. Miller and accepted it as establishing service incurrence. But from the secretary's suggestion, it's also foreseeable that in cases where credibility is a close call, rather than applying the benefit of the doubt, the board will simply find statements to be incredible just to avoid remands to obtain new examinations that did not consider those statements.
But couldn't, I mean, what about the secretary's argument that even the new exam might be a waste of time because the board could make an adverse credibility determination after that exam?
Well, initially, we would reiterate that in this case, the board has already found him to be credible, and so an examination is needed. Yes, the board could still find him in...
The board found him competent, right? I mean, they're silent as to the credibility.
Right, it made an explicit competency finding and then accepted it as credible because it accepted the second Chevin element satisfied. So even if on remand the board ultimately found him to lack credibility, an examiner or the board's credibility finding wouldn't be fully informed without the examiner's analysis and treatment of those lay statements in a medical scientific context. It's just another factor that the board would consider in weighing the evidence and to determine credibility.
I mean, so the board couldn't remand on this very question as to whether the statements, say, about the foot disability are credible in and of themselves. They couldn't ask the examiner to...
No. The examiner would not be charged with a credibility determination.
Not the credibility in terms of, like, the subjective honesty of the statement, but the credibility of the statements themselves, or at least the probative value of the statements.
Are you asking about the examiner's consideration of them or what the board should tell the examiner?
Well, if the board is looking at the probative value of his statements that, he incurred his foot disability standing on the flight deck, right? And then in the absence of other evidence, and they could they remand for an examiner to evaluate the probative value of those statements?
I think that would be putting a credibility determination in the hands of examiners, and I don't think that should be assigning a...
No, I understand. Maybe I'll formulate it a little bit differently, which is if the only way that they could find those statements lack credibility, right, meaning they just lack probative value, is if they were to have to make some medical determination on their own that they cannot make, could they essentially remand for further evidence that allows them to render credibility determination in the first instance? You see what I'm saying?
For the board to render.
Yes.
Regardless of credibility, the examiner would still need to account for them. And I'm not sure if I'm either understanding or responding to your question accurately.
No, I think I understand. I mean, you can play through.
So you're saying if the board, if we remand for the board to make a credibility determination to see if the examiner would need to consider the statements?
No, I mean, a credibility determination isn't merely a statement as to whether the claimant is being honest or something, or should be believed in terms of a subjective. It's about the probative value of the statements themselves. I mean, there may be various reasons why a statement may or may not be credible. Ultimately, the determination is to the truth of the statements or the probative value of the statements themselves intrinsically as to whether they are there's really not much evidence, obviously, related to the foot disability, for instance. In some ways, really, this is in some ways the only evidence or the only positive evidence about it. So other than the board just saying, listen, we just don't believe this evidence intrinsically, The question is whether they could simply remand it to an examiner with some questions that could maybe flesh out the state of the evidence as to, say, the foot question.
Yes, I think the best approach would be to have the board remand to the exam or with instructions to the examiner to accept as true the relevant lay statements for purposes of a medical determination, formulate an opinion accordingly, and then state whether that opinion would change if those statements were ultimately found to be untrue. That way the board is fully informed on the credibility issue both ways, an opinion accepting the statements as true and an opinion if those credibility, if it was ultimately a negative credibility determination.
Well, this is a service connection case, right? So what difference does it make whether statements are true or untrue? I mean, they're uncontroverted. Why is there an issue here as to the truth of the statements?
It's not the truth. It's that the examiner did not consider them in formulating an opinion.
But why should we go? Why should the poor veteran have to go all the way back? Why can't we enter as a matter of law? The board did the wrong thing by not assisting the veteran in perfecting his appeal when it got there. There's no other evidence that said he wasn't on the ship, he wasn't on his feet, he wasn't doing a job that required him to stand these hours.
A medical nexus opinion still needs to link his current disability to his onset of pain during service.
Yeah, but my point is, what other than his statements does this, I assume it's going to be a medical examiner that is going to make the determination.
Yes.
So if he goes to a doctor, a VA doctor, who's assigned, by the way, who made the initial determination here? A doctor?
As far as nexus?
Yeah.
Yes.
An MD type doctor.
I can't say for certain whether it was a...
Well, isn't it important? You know, we get a lot of these cases where we have clerks making determinations on medical right. issues. So who was it here?
In this case...
All right, you'll find out. Sure. You want us, I assume, to order a remand to the regional office for a doctor to make a determination as to whether or not the uncontroverted statements about what he did, what the veteran did or didn't do on active duty constituted a service-connected disability or a service-connected condition.
You would need to consider his report of onset of pain during service, whether that is related to his current disabilities, and also consider his report that he continued self-medicating with over-the-counter medications from the time he separated from service in July 1994 to the time he sought formal treatment in 2007.
Any other questions?
Are you finished?
I have more. But I'm...
The fatigue syndrome issue is unrelated to this Barr-McKinney distinction, right?
Yes. We didn't challenge the fatigue syndrome on the basis of the McKinney error, if you will.
So is there any lay evidence in the record that was unconsidered or not deemed competent or credible, so it's not related at all?
No, there was no rejection of his statements.
So it should just go back under, why should it go back?
Why should the fatigue go back? Because of the board's reasons or bases there, and there was an adequacy of the 2012 Gulf War examination rationale.
So their failure to discuss the etiology, pathophysiology?
Yes. Yes.
Under Stewart?
Yes.
Stewart.
So the secretary's position cannot be applied consistently to all examinations. Initial examinations would then only be considering service treatment records, what's documented in service treatment records, and not what the veteran reported occurred during service, and that will ultimately lead to a Buchanan error if the board were to rely on those examinations. The threshold for an adequate examination cannot change at different stages of the claims process. Mr. Miller's position, however, can be applied consistently to all examinations. VA examiners, or VA can tell examiners to accept as true, for purposes of a medical determination, the relevant lay statements, and then explain whether their opinion would change if those were found untrue. This resolves any concern that the board would be assigning a you make it call to the examiner as to what is true and or untrue, and it would also resolve any concern that the board prematurely decides credibility without having all of the material evidence before it. In fact, it's already being applied in the context of exams for rating purposes, because under Sharp and Mitchell, functional loss estimations as to functional loss by flares are a requirement, and there's no requirement that the report of flares needs to be found credible before the examiner consider it. So applying the facts, I'm going to reiterate, the facts in this case do show that the board accepted, under the second Shedden element, his statements that the foot pain began during service. Applying the analysis outside the facts of this case, the board's credibility determination is not fully informed without the medical examiner's analysis and treatment of those relevant lay statements. It's still useful to the board's ultimate finding. Therefore, the court should hold that the board's duty to assist finding is clearly erroneous and remand to get a new examination that accounts for the relevant lay statements at face value and indicates whether the opinion would change if they were ultimately found to be untrue. This ensures that the board's decision will be fully informed regardless of its ultimate credibility determination.
Anything else?
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Good morning. It may please the court. The May 7th, 2018 decision should be remanded to allow the board to make the initial determination of Mr. Miller's credibility, or the credibility of Mr. Miller's lay statements. This is the proper remedy for two reasons. First, because the facts provided by Mr. Miller conflict with the facts accepted by the VA examiner, the issue of credibility is raised. Where the issue of credibility is raised, the court has a duty to ensure that the actual basis for any examination rests on correct facts. And whereas here, those facts remain in dispute, a remand is required for the board to explain whether Mr. Miller's lay statements are credible. Second, to find the examination inadequate for failing to consider lay statements as appellant requests would require that this court make a factual finding in the first instance, which it cannot do. To our first point, where the board finds an examination adequate but does not address the credibility of a claimant's lay statements, the court's remedy depends on whether there is a conflict between the facts provided by the claimant and the facts accepted by the examiner.
What's the conflict here?
So the conflict here, for example, for the feet, for the March 2017 exam, the conflict that appellant raises is that the examiner found there was no nexus, but appellant argues that the examiner, if you look at the opinion, it's on the record at 347, and it was a physician. The physician opines that there's no evidence based on even accepting at face value that he did stand on the flight deck for long hours and that his feet hurt. The examiner explained, well, there's no evidence of post-service symptomatology, so therefore no nexus. Appellant argues that the examiner did not consider his September 11th statement regarding that he, after service, his feet continued to hurt and he took over-the-counter medications to treat his feet until he sought treatment in 2012. So because Mr. Miller said he had continuous symptoms, but the examiner said there wasn't, there is a conflict between the facts provided by the claimant and the facts accepted by the examiner. When there is no conflict, the court can find that the board's finding that the examination was adequate. They can agree with that. But where there is a conflict, the issue of credibility is raised. And whereas here, because the board has not addressed the credibility of Mr. Miller's lay statements, the court cannot determine whether or not the examination is adequate.
Why isn't that an implicit credibility determination that the board made, that implicitly they found Mr. Miller credible?
It's not an implicit credibility finding for two reasons. So for first, the board only found that Mr. Miller was competent to provide the statements that he provided. And then using the foot as an example, the second reason why there's no implicit credibility finding is that the September 2011 statement regarding the continuity of his symptoms, the board doesn't mention that in its decision. It only discusses his statements that he hurt his feet while he was in service. So if the board doesn't discuss that statement at all, there's no way to find that there was implied credibility finding.
Would that be the improper fact finding of our court?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree, because it would be this court supplanting its own impressions of what the board thought without the board having explicitly stated that it found those statements to be credible.
But how, I mean, because for me, I mean, just take the foot one, right? Because you would have, I mean, his statements would be, in a sense, the only positive evidence as to the condition, right?
Based on the record before the court now, yes, the only positive evidence is the veteran's statement that he continued to treat his feet after service.
Right, and so, I mean, if he's deemed competent, right, he's not testifying as the nexus or diagnosing anything. He's just saying, this is what I observed and remember about my feet at the time. If he's competent and those are credible, that would be the only evidence really on that point.
Yes, Your Honor, if the board did find him, if this court were to remand and ask that the board explain whether or not their statements were credible, the board would then explain whether or not their statements taken in combination with whatever else evidence there are, the separation exam, his service or post-service treatment records, the board could then make the determination so whether or not that statement was sufficient to award service connection.
Right, in the absence of any countervailing evidence. I'm just not sure. I mean, that to me, this is all somewhat evident. I don't know what in that would constitute an improper fact finding of this court. I mean, these are statements that I think we can infer from the record.
We're entitled to interpret facts. We're forbidden to find facts anew, but we're certainly entitled to interpret facts found below. Are we not?
You are, Your Honor. But here, I would just...
I don't get what the problem is here in terms of this so-called conflict. The veteran made a statement. He's made his statements as what he did, how he got the condition he got. Where's the, other than the opinion of the doctor, that the condition he was complaining of was not service-connected? Is there anything else? Is there any conflict as to the testimony of the veteran as to what he did, when he did it, what he did about it?
Your Honor, I can't answer that question.
Well, what's in the record?
Well,
did somebody say, did the commanding officer of the ship say he was never on deck? He's not telling the truth? Are there any objective records to suggest that he was a clerk below decks, never saw the top half of the ship?
Your Honor, we don't,
something along those lines?
Your Honor, we don't know those facts, which is why the board should have the opportunity to explain, go back through the record, explain, okay, he was on flight decks, and yes, he did hurt his feet. But based on the fact that he said X at a separation exam, we do not find his later statements that he had continuous symptoms to be credible. That's the board's determination to make, because as the fact finder, they have the entire record before them, and they have the best knowledge and resources to make that determination. I would also like to point out that for the implied credibility here, the court can't find that the board found Mr. Miller's statements as to continuity credible.
Why not?
Well, the board did not discuss the September 2011 statement, and then also the fact that the board found the examination that did not discuss that statement either to be probative or credible and use that to deny the service connection claim, it would appear based on that, that the board did not find Mr. Miller's lay statements to be credible.
That's your position.
Yes.
That based upon that, they impliedly found, or we should infer that the board found that his statements were not credible.
Your Honor, it's our position that the fact that the board did not discuss the statement and also did not, or relied on the examination that did not discuss the statement, would weigh against a finding that the board implicitly found him credible. So we're not arguing that the board implicitly found him not credible. We're just saying the theory of implied credibility doesn't fit here because the board first then discussed that statement and then second relied on an examination that did not discuss that statement.
Any questions? I didn't mean to, if you had more to say, continue.
Sure. So we would also like to draw your Honor's attention to what our appellant said earlier, is that McKinney does not control in this case. So for McKinney, the credibility of the lay testimony was not raised to the court. Because that issue was not raised or presented to the court's holding on the credibility of Mr. McKinney's lay statements does not have any bearing on the matter here, because the court first has to determine whether or not Mr. Miller's lay statements are credible. And because the court can't do that in the first instance, it should be remanded for the board to make the credibility determination.
Why can't we hold that the board was wrong in not accepting the lay statements as credible? I mean, here's everyday life. The board member is looking at the veteran. Is he not? I don't know whether it's a he or she, the member of the board. Was there a hearing here?
No, there was no hearing, Your Honor.
So there's no way to judge credibility by looking at the veteran?
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
So all you have is the cold record of a veteran's statement, uncontradicted or uncontroverted by anybody, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't, I would almost say as a matter of law, that should be taken as an uncontradicted statement and impliedly believed or should have been believed by the board? What about that?
Your Honor, we disagree, because to impliedly find him credible, this court would be making that determination for the board. The board, as the fact finder, has the duty.
Well, what if we found that the board acted improperly by not making the explicit determination that in the absence of contravening facts, whether on the record or somebody brought in to testify against the veteran, that as a matter of law, he should be accepted as truthful?
Your Honor, I think that takes it one step too far. What we're asking this court to do is to remand for the board to provide a better reasons or basis for whether or not Mr. Miller is credible. And then if he is found credible, the board should then go and get an examination.
Well, let me ask you this. How did this case get here, if that's your position? Why didn't the board send it back to the regional office or wherever to get a determination? Isn't that something defective about the way the board operated? I mean, the case is already here. So what are we going to do about it?
Your Honor, we're asking that you remand this claim for the board to make the determination as to the credibility first. And then based on that credibility determination, the board would then go get an examination. But it wouldn't save anyone time, and it would waste both the appellant's time and VA's resources for this court to say the board erred in not accepting his statements as credible. If on remand the board reviews the record and finds some piece of conflicting evidence that weighs against Mr. Miller's lay statements.
Well, shouldn't they have done that already?
Yes, they should have, and that's why, yes, Your Honor, they should have, and that's why we're asking.
Well, why doesn't the secretary correct this? Why do you bring the case up? Why is the case here? Why, if you're taking the position that this has got to go all the way back to the regional office, get another doctor or the same doctor, examine the veteran, and then the board is supposed to make a determination that the veteran was credible or incredible based upon something new, why didn't the board member do that? Why didn't the board member say, gee, you know, I think, isn't there a statutory obligation for the board member to make themselves aware of all the details of the file, the record of the veteran, before there is a determination? That's a statutory requirement, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So when the board member looks at this file and says, gee, there's no connection or there's no support for the veteran statement, or there's an absence of a veteran statement, shouldn't they do something about it? Why does he have to wait years to get all the way up here?
Yes, Your Honor, we're not saying the board did not err here. We are saying that the board did err, but the dispute here is about the remedy that should be provided by the court. The secretary's position is that the remedy to be provided is to ask the board to make the credibility finding, which they did not make in the past determination.
As opposed to the court making the determination that in the absence of a contradicted set of facts, it's implied that whether the board found it or not, the veteran was telling the truth.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Question.
Would the board, in a sense, need more evidence to make a credibility determination here?
Your Honor, not necessarily. That would be for the board to decide. But the board has what's presented to the court is just the record of proceedings. So the board has the entire claims file. So there are things that may have been before the board at the time that the board should have weighed at that time, but did not. What we're asking for is this court to say, yes, board, you did err. So on remand, make the credibility finding. And if you do find Mr. Miller's statements to be credible, then go get an examination that discusses those statements. To find the examination inadequate for failing to consider the lay statements is this akin to this court making a factual finding in the first instance, which it can't do.
But, I mean, if they were to find them credible, couldn't they reevaluate the nexus? I mean, would that, you're saying that would call into question the examiner's opinion as a nexus? They would then have to address that.
Your Honor, sorry. Your Honor, there are instances, I'm not quite sure, I think Mr. Miller has applied for service connection for foot arthritis. So in that instance, the board could find the statements credible and then also award service connection based on a presumptive condition. But for the others, the board has to first find whether or not his statements are credible or not. And then if they find them credible, then they would ask an examiner to take those statements and consider it with the remainder of the evidence and then provide a nexus opinion.
We have the power to review an implicit fact determination, right?
No, Your Honor, because if it's implicit, it means that the board did not explicitly make that finding. So implicit would seem to appear that this court would be making the factual finding for the court in the first instance.
But I mean, I agree if anything, if there was any implicit fact finding here, it was that the veteran was not credible. Because were the veteran credible, then I think it does call into question perhaps the overall judgment as to nexus. We can certainly review that. I mean, the plausibility of a finding of credibility or the absence of a valid finding of credibility and you know, obviously suggest a remedy for that.
Yes, Your Honor. So for the feet again, if you look at the totality of the board statements of reasons or bases, they say he has the first shedden element, which is a current disability. Then they go to the second element, which is an in-service occurrence or injury. So they say the appellant here alleges that he hurt his feet from long hours standing on the flight deck. The board then discusses that. Then the board moves on to the third element, which is a nexus. And the board says, we rely on this March 2017 medical opinion, which found no nexus. So taking those statements together, you could find that the board disagreed.
Right, but I mean, the lack of those aren't necessarily fully independent determinations. I mean, the lack of nexus was basically the fact that there was no evidence attesting to this period of time. And the evidence was, you know, obviously his statements, properly competent and credible, would have been evidence attesting to that period of time. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Because the board only found Mr. Miller to be competent to make the statements and did not find him credible, it would be a step too far for this court to say that the board implicitly found him credible, because they would be making that factual determination for the board in the first instance. Mm-hmm. And then, again, I just want to emphasize that the facts of McKinney are vastly different from the facts presented here, because the issue presented in the case of McKinney was not whether or not Mr. McKinney's lay statements were credible. It was whether or not an examination that did not provide a proper explanation for why a non-speculative medical opinion could be provided. The court then, based on its jurisprudence, for under Jones found that the examiner there did not provide a proper explanation for why a non-speculative medical opinion could be provided and remanded based on those facts. The issue of Mr. McKinney's credibility was not brought up at all. So the holding of McKinney cannot apply to the holding of this case.
Anything else? Anything else?
No. Thank you, Your Honor. We would just ask that this court remand for the board to make the factual finding of Mr. Miller's credibility in the first instance.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counselor.
Just three quick points, Your Honors. The board's reasons or basis requirement requires it to make explicit findings if it's going to reject favorable evidence, in this case, relevant lay statements. Where it addresses it, seems to accept it as establishing an element of service connection, and doesn't reject it explicitly, and doesn't point to any evidence that would contradict it, it has accepted the lay statements as relevant and as true.
You want us to find that as a matter of law?
Yes.
Next.
But if it, in a sense, when you've got a multi-element inquiry and each element is independent, if it rejects something on other grounds, could that be deemed to sort of implicitly accepted it?
Yes, it would not have reached the nexus element if it didn't find a disability.
No, I grant you that, sure. But what if it just said, listen, we're going to go right to the third one? Is that a necessarily sequential inquiry, or could they have just gone, listen, there's no nexus?
I think it is sequential. Sometimes the board will address it anyway, but it would have already explicitly said we don't find the second one satisfied.
Sure.
As far as the secretary's understanding of McKinney, the facts, as we explained, are synonymous, and the board even noted, or the court even noted in that decision in its footnote, that the board did not find Mr. McKinney's lay statements to be incredible. The same situation is presented here. Finally, the secretary on pages 10, 12, and 15 of their memo argues that remanding to get a new examination under these circumstances is a waste of time because the board could just say the statements aren't credible. This is an example on pages 11 and 12 of a possible result of if our position were to be accepted. That if a new examination is provided and the board then finds the statements lack credibility, the outcome will be unchanged. This may certainly be true in some cases. Not all lay statements are credible. But for the secretary to argue that this isn't the more efficient approach is to say that more often than not, veterans are not telling the truth.
So what do you want the explicit holding of the court to be?
That the 2017 VA examination is inadequate because the examiner did not consider relevant lay statements in formulating her opinion.
And therefore, the remedy for that?
A new examination is required that accounts for the relevant lay statements as true, or if the examiner has a medical basis for not believing the statements, state whether the opinion would change if found untrue.
And that goes back to the board if you're dissatisfied with the result?
Yes.
Anything else? Thanks very much. We'll reserve opinion and we'll come down to greet the council.